how much has the conversation around the best player in the world changed because of this Stanley Cup postseason? NHL player turned analyst Mike Rupp is here to talk Stanley Cup playoffs and about being drafted twice. It's a story you've never heard before, and it is wild. Mike Rupp's on The Chirp with Darren Millard.
Oh, how'd that feel, old man?
Boys, I'm Mike today. Let everyone know, don't say anything stupid.
Hit him. Light him up.
Yeah, nice hit.
That's solid.
That's a disgrace. I'm going to run you. I'm just waiting for my shift.
Back on the air with the Chirp Podcast with Darren Millard. Normally, we do these feature interviews and we cover all kinds of different angles. But today, we thought we'd go somewhere different. And that's talking about what's happening in the National Hockey League right now. He's on the radio. He's on the TV. He's got his own podcast. That's Hockey Talk. And he's been avoiding us for years. Are we ready to bury the hatchet? Mike Rupp?
We'll see how it goes. We'll see how it goes early on here. I might be bailing halfway through this interview.
There's been a rivalry for a long time between you and I, and I think it's your fault, personally.
But I like how we can put our differences aside and come in here and just have a authentic hockey conversation, and we'll see if we can start patching things up, you know.
Let's start with the Colorado Avalanche. Some good news. What do you think of their performance in relation to being a surprise at all? Because they had to get over the hump, but now it looks like, why weren't they here every year?
Yeah, so I think that's a pretty obvious statement. What they have gone through in the past has served them well now. And, they've been able to manage things, I thought, pretty well. Listen, man, I think in the NHL playoffs, managing hockey games, manufacturing offense at times, manufacturing energy at times, all these things, like, that's, I feel like, what Stanley Cup teams do. I mean, you could be a great team in the regular season and have a bunch of things where a bunch of boxes that you check. But this is a team that it's really hard to sweep teams. That's really hard to do. It's hard to beat teams back-to-back, I think, in the Stanley Cup playoffs. And for Colorado, I feel like they've done a very good job of understanding that when you've got a chance to put a team down and keep them down and knock them out, you've got to do it. And they've found ways, and it's been ways with depth players. It's been times where you look at game four against Edmonton going in the third period. I mean, you need a Hail Mary. Who do you got? You got your superstars, man. You got McKinnon, Landeskog, Rantanen, and get that third period goals to kind of get this thing going. So they've got a nice blend, a little bit of everything, and they got that killer instinct. I think that's been the biggest difference.
Cale Makar has been a revelation, even though he was known to us before. Do you think he's actually challenging for best player in the world right now?
I do. Yeah. It's crazy to think that. I mean, if you would have told me this, or asked me this, I should say, earlier in the season, I'd be like, he's tickling the top five, probably. Yeah. But now what he's doing, even if you just look at him and Devon Taves, that D pairing, through the first three games of that Edmonton series, Leon and Connor had zero rush opportunities. Zero. You know, and so eventually these guys are going to break through. We saw them break through in game four. It wasn't enough for Edmonton, but, like, they can defend. Like, that's the thing about Cale Makar, is I don't think people understand how well this guy can defend. And I don't need to tell anybody on here, oh, he's got great stop and go ability, explosiveness. He's got this ability to read offensive plays better than anybody else. We all know that. We all see that. Start paying attention to the way he plays defense, the way he closes gaps, closes out plays. He'll close out plays and he'll be confrontational up ice at the offensive blue line. He's squashing things before it even comes back. So you might not necessarily see Cale Makar he'll do that too, but on a 2-on-1, make an incredible breakup of play and whatever. He's killed that play at the offensive blue line because he's gapping up and he's right in the grill of the winger or the center. So this guy is unbelievable. And I think when I watch it, there's numerous times this year where I'm watching games of Colorado. Excuse me, say you're flipping between games and I'll tune in and I see a play happen where you see a guy buzzing in a right hand shot, stop, go, motoring around the net, making all these things. I'm like, oh, look at McKinnon go. And then all of a sudden I'm like, that's Cale Makar. You know what I mean? So Nathan McKinnon's world class top end player. We've been asking if he's a best player in the world. This guy's a defenseman and he's doing that. So yeah, I agree, man. I think he is I don't know if I could say he's the best in the world for what we just saw in the playoffs with Connor, Leon, but he's in the conversation for top three players in the world, I think, for sure.
Okay. Producer Bob gave me this question, and I think it's fascinating. Hedman or Makar? Who do you take first?
Oh, gosh. Taking age out of it.
Yeah. Right now, you're mad at Producer Bob.
I am. This is so hard because I've thought, and Victor Hedman has been the best defenseman in the world for years now. What I'm seeing now, I'm going to probably say Cale Makar.
Yeah.
And because I'm seeing that ability. So what separated Victor Hedman so much is that he can shut you down with his size, his reach. He's so good defensively. Cale Makar puts up better numbers than Victor. Or, you know, he can, I think, put up more numbers, but Victor Hedman can certainly put up numbers. But now we're starting to see that gap in defending close, and Cale can defend close to him. And so, yeah, I'll probably say game-breaking ability, Cale Makar has got it more. So, it's a tough pick, but I say Cale Makar.
Was the Oilers season a success by getting to the third round?
This is one that gets me. I don't know how to look at this and evaluate this. And I think that's the challenge for the brass of that organization. And you could say the same thing about the last couple of years. I've always thought this over the years. How do you evaluate a magical run? You know what I mean? Because there was parts of, let's look at even last year with Montreal. Montreal was special in the playoffs. They were. I'm not going to take that away from them. But there was 6 months of them. They were not a good hockey team. So how do you really say, like, we're here, this is what we need in the offseason to move forward? That's my concern a little bit here with Edmonton is, like, I think it would be a very bad thing for this organization, these players, to think we're right there. They had two players that were assaulting the NHL record books and the pace that they were going at in the playoffs. And they've got some holes to fill. And I love what they've done in a lot of different ways, but they're a team that needs to have either entry-level contracts or reclamation projects. And we talk about Evander Kane. Why was that so good? Why did that work out so good? Because there's value in that. He was not on a expensive contract like that. You got more value than what the contract was. And that's a team like that, a team like Pittsburgh over the years, a team like Chicago over the years. When you have those superstar players that are taking up that much of the cap, you need value players. And that's usually entry-level contracts or reclamation projects. You look at Val Nichushkin, what he's doing in Colorado, like they need deals like that. Bring a guy in. And so I don't know. It'll be interesting how this offseason goes for them. If I'm of the Evander Kane camp, I'm advising him to do whatever he can to stay in Edmonton. And if that's taking less money now, it'll extend your career on the back end. And you get to play with $29.97. I don't know if it's going to be. I do know. The grass is not greener anywhere else. Like, you're in a good spot right there. But I don't know. They got a solidified goaltender. They've got to get a top four defenseman, probably a couple defensemen, I think. Their bottom six needs some help. So they got a lot of work. I think Ken Holland's going to have to pull a little bit of a rabbit out of the hat and make some shrewd decisions this summer.
I chase the money. I do. If somebody offers me more money, I'm gone. Sorry, Bob. Like, beat drop the mic. See you later. How tough is that as a player? Not if you're Evander Kane, not to take the bigger money somewhere else, knowing that you've got Connor and Leon.
We've seen it before where you're in a good spot. Let's look at another guy that I think made probably not too far off of a similar decision. I mean, maybe not to the degree of money that Evander Kane, because Evander Kane, we've always known Evander Kane can play the game, man. This guy's he's different. He provides something. He's a unique player in this league. But look to Pittsburgh and Brian Rust. What he did there in Pittsburgh, yes. Brian Rust would have gotten a lot more money and elsewhere. But as you sit there and you look at it, Brian Rust is probably like a Michigan kid, went to college, wasn't supposed to be a superstar. I'm a part of the best line or one of the best lines in hockey with Jake Gensel and Sidney Crosby. So for him to just, he's won two cups. He's wants to chase a third, and to be just to put yourself back in that position, I think is it's huge. And it serves you well on the back end. Like it's just, let's look at even Anson Carter's a perfect example. Remember when Anson was in Vancouver?
Yeah.
He was with the Sedins
twins.
And I listen, I love Anson, and Anson and I are boys. Like, I don't think I've really discussed this with him, but I remember at that time when he signed in Columbus, it was like, it's different because, you know, you play the what if game. We all play the what if game at different times when you're a free agent. He was in Vancouver playing with the Twins. Maybe that could have extended it longer. Maybe on the back end, you would have made more money. I don't know. It's too easy to say that.
Part of it is the athlete wants to show that.
Yeah, that he can do it. Right.
He can do it, right.
Nobody wants to be a passenger.
Yeah.
And that is true. That's a great point. Like, nobody wants to be known as, oh, this guy's only good because he plays with Sidney Crosby. You know, yeah. Oh, this guy, but I don't know. So it's tough. And I don't get on anybody about any of that stuff, man. I don't. Like, if you got to do what's right for you and what's going to give you your peace of mind, and every situation's different. So I got no problem when guys leave for more money, more term or whatever, but that's something you got to take into the equation. I felt on a much smaller scale in my career, whenever I had the opportunity and the power to choose where I was going, I was choosing a team in the playoffs. And I will say this, and it's totally different, but totally similar too, if that makes any sense at all. In my career, I played 12 years in the league. I've been fortunate enough to be on some really good teams. I missed the playoffs one season. And that season is because I got traded at the trade deadline to the Arizona Coyotes. And
you got screwed. That doesn't count if you got traded midseason.
Okay, that doesn't count. So then I should be 11 for 11.
Exactly.
So here's my point though. And you know how I was as a player. Like I tried to make the most of what I had, and the fact that I was able to play 12 years is something I'm proud of. And I had to change my game a lot. If I wasn't on Stanley Cup playoff teams, I don't play 12 years in the league. Because you create this guy's a winner. He's won a cup. He's been in the playoffs. He has his experiences. Look who the guys he's played with. He's had under these regimes, and he's learned how to play the game like this. That's what it is. When you have success and you're with a group that works, just go with that. It'll extend you on the back end. And I would love to see Evander Kane back in Edmonton, but I have a feeling there's going to be some teams out there, especially with his playoff performance, that's going to offer him something a lot bigger.
I'll just say this, like player ego, confidence in yourself is tough to turn down the cash when somebody's offering. Like that goes with most athletes. Why'd you go through the draft twice? You're the first person I've talked to face to face that's ever been double drafted.
You get Mike Milbury on the line or no? Come on, Mike, explain what happened. I've even gotten to fully, you know, I worked with Mike at NBC.
Oh, you hashed this out?
I don't think it was hashing out because I don't think we had any issue. I mean, it worked out for, I think, both. It was that I'll give you what happened, but we kind of just, you know, we moved on, I guess is the best way. I didn't say, you know, when I worked in the NBC with them, like, hey, Mike, let's talk about when you didn't give me a contract and went back to the draft. So here's the deal. I was from Cleveland, Ohio. I played high school hockey in Ohio, which wasn't very strong. I played 1 year in the OHL. I got drafted in the first round by the Islanders, ninth overall. And it was all on projection of what I was going to be, right? Like I was an 18-year-old, 6'5", probably 215, 220. And I was always a point getter growing up in the U.S. program and everything. And but in the OHL, I didn't put up killer numbers in my rookie year in the Ontario Hockey League. Like I was drafted around players that had 80, 90, 100 points. I had 30 as a forward. And so it was all projection driven. And so with that being said, my agent told me at the time, he's like, you're probably going to be an 11th hour signing. They're going to wait and see how you develop over the next 2 years. So I kind of was under that. And I was growing as a player and getting better. And then that was June 1st at the time is when you needed to sign with your parent team. And it was the day before, 2 days before, I got an offer from Mike and the Islanders. And at that time, if you remember, the contracts were mostly bonus driven.
Yes.
Right. And it was like, So as a kid, as an 18-year-old, you're like, oh, that guy, you know, Manny Malhotra, he got, you know, $950,000 signing bonus, or Rico Fada got this, or Vinny LeCavier got that, which is obviously an extreme. My offer for a signing bonus was low, and I didn't really know much difference. And it's easy for me to say I would have taken it now. But my agent said to me at the time, which was a little bit of dirty pool, I feel like, hey, just so you know, if you sign this, you'll be the lowest signing top 10 pick in NHL history. And I'm like, oh, that doesn't sound great. You know, I don't want to have that label. So, you know, my dad and I were discussing, and we're like, well, we'll take your guidance on this. And they went back to Mike and they said, hey, Mike, if that's all you're willing to offer, Mike Rupp, then you're going to have to be prepared to let him go back in the draft. And from what I was told from this end, Mike said, are you kidding me? And hung up the phone. And then, so we're waiting there. This is the night before, like say the deadline's midnight. It's 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock. And it got to the point where my dad and I were like, can we call him back and try to get this discussion going again? Mike wouldn't pick up the phone.
No way.
He wouldn't pick up the phone. And so 12 o'clock hits. I'm an 18-year-old kid who got drafted in the first round. And now all of a sudden I'm like, what happens now? Like, where does this go now? And I didn't sleep much that night. Fortunately, it wasn't a long wait. It was a couple weeks. Went back in the draft. Did not attend the draft. Didn't know what was going to happen. Got drafted third round by the Devils. And that obviously worked out. And that's the right organization that for me that was patient with their players and whatever. But it was scary, man. It was a scary time. But, you know, you can also go back that Islanders at that time were kind of scary too. Yeah. the way that things were going. But that it was a strange thing, and I didn't love going through it, to be honest with you.
The other side of it is you played hardball and you won. That's the way I look.
Did
it.
I?
Well,
how'd I win? Because I won a cup in Jersey, but
yeah,
that's true. But there's days when you don't know if you're going to make it and be a full time NHLer. Where that lowest top 10 pick money that was on the table, I didn't get that when I signed in New Jersey. So, you know what I mean? Like you left some money on the table. So at that time, you don't know, like, I don't know I'm going to play 12 years. I don't know if I'm going to play 12 games. So it's stressful, but yeah, I love what happened. I think everything happens for a reason. I was able to go to a team that took their time with me. I was in the minors for 2.5 seasons in Albany, and was fortunate enough to be a part of a cup winning team. So it was good.
Well, I don't have a career as a motivational speaker, Tony Robbins, like, because I couldn't get you feeling better at all. Hey, you played with a great goaltender, Hall of Fame goaltender, best goaltender, arguably of all time. He's in that conversation, Marty Brodeur. What are the Rangers and the Tampa Bay Lightning going through right now, playing in front of two studs? They both feel like they got the best goalie in the game, best goalie in the world.
Yeah, I find that, you know, we've talked about the Carey Price factor over the years. You know, Marty was he, in my opinion, is the best goaltender ever. I worked with Dave Reed the other night, and he was talking about, because it was an anniversary of something in Colorado when they won a cup. I don't know if it was like the cup winning day or if it was just advancement from the Western Conference Finals or whatever. And I was teasing him. I'm like, yeah, that was the second best goalie to ever play the game. And, you know, we know the first one was. And he's like, all right, we'll argue about that later. But the one thing I know over the years, it's like when you have a dominant goaltender, like an all-time great, and that's what Bassey's going to go down as.
Yeah.
And Igor is at least starting that way to look like he's going to be something similar. You start trying to have the perfect shot. And we all watch the playoffs. We've seen a ton of goals in these playoffs. How many of them are right inside the elbow? How many of them are a guy collecting the puck and dragging it towards their body, making the far blocker, you know, kind of, you got that little gap over there and you're going to snap it, you know, top corner, far side, blocker side, like it, a couple, they're all ugly. They're just getting the puck back on that as fast as you can. Yeah, broken plays, hitting off. I mean, we've probably seen 50 goals off the opponent's defenseman or whatever. So I find with those players, and at times, even you're trying to look for a better option. You're trying to find a play that can, the old side to side upstairs. Okay, good luck, because it's hard to do ever in the NHL, but in the Stanley Cup playoffs, that's you're not supposed to get those kind of looks. So I find that kind of factor comes into play. It's like guys try to be a little too fine and just get pucks there, get quantity. Quantity over quality, which sounds kind of weird at times, but just put pucks there. I mean, you got it. We talk about greasy goals, all the little hockey lingo that we use. Greasy goals are because you get quantity on net and you get bodies there and you create some havoc. So I think that those guys make you kind of second guess things, and second guessing in the playoffs is not a good thing.
Can you believe the Rangers are so good at home and can't win on the road? I know they won game 7 against Carolina, but it's bizarre. What do you think gives here? Do they keep going or does it eventually break?
Hey, they keep playing Bobo O'Reilly. I don't know. I mean, that gets me going. I went to a couple games in the playoffs there, and they play that, and the place just gets buzzing and gets a different level of energy. I'll say this. Like, I don't know if it's – I just find – and we've discussed it a lot in the playoffs this year, because we've seen the series where it's Boston, Carolina, or Carolina Rangers. There's been the Homer series.
Yeah.
What gives? And I don't know as a player, because I was like, I don't, you know, some players were better at home than they were on the road, but some players, a lot of players were pretty much the same. I think that what it is like, there's such a small difference between winning and losing in this league that you need every little edge you can. You need to get squeezed. And if you can just get a little bit more energy, and I was thinking about this a lot the other day, I think some players struggle. This is why some teams are better at home than away. Some players struggle, I believe, with manufacturing energy. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. You can sit there and say, well, how can't you get fired up? It's the Eastern Conference Finals. How can you not? No, it's not about getting fired up. It's about you're bringing yourself to here. But the home team in that home crowd, which is a real thing, like they just get here. And that difference is everything. And so you have to have players that find ways to, that's why when you see scrums or you see road teams going in there, just trying to be antagonistic, bring the energy up, you know? And that's something I think that not everybody loves that part of it, but I think it's just, you're trying to manufacture something. So I don't know, the Rangers, for whatever reason at home, they got no problem. On the road, they just have a harder time finding that energy. Maybe it's not even them finding that energy. Maybe it's the other team is home and they find that little difference, right? So it's been something in the playoffs here. But then you go to Colorado and they're defying everything. They haven't lost a game on the road. So I have no idea. Maybe all this is a moot point, but it's at least about energy, and it can make a huge difference in the playoffs. And I think that being at home does that for you.
Last one for you. Does one team over the other have a better shot against Colorado? I'm talking Tampa or the Rangers, if one team comes out of there.
Yeah, I'll keep it simple and I'll talk about both. I think Tampa would have a better chance because of what they've gone through. They are game managers. What they're doing in these playoffs doesn't look like what they did in 20 or 21 in regards to, like, they had some times where they would out-talent you.
Yeah,
because they still have that ability. They're a different team though without Brady.
Their Point. Grit is awesome.
Their grit, that's where it's at, man. That they have learned now that, all right, we can still bite you with offense. We can smother you with defense at times, but you know what we're going to do? We're going to play that clock better than anybody. And we're going to do the right things at the right time and find ways to win. That's what they've done. Toronto, in my opinion, I don't know what you guys think. Toronto, they outplayed Tampa in round one. Yeah. Like, if you're going to look at it as a whole, the Maple Leafs should have won, but they didn't. Tampa managed the game, and then they brought it to a certain point where Vassie's like, I got this. And he took over. So I think Tampa would be one because of their experience. But I also think the Rangers would be an interesting matchup because I think Colorado, I used this analogy yesterday, and I'm always using analogies, guys. And it's like Darren, it's painful for you guys because I use analogies all the time, and I'm not trying to do it like, oh, I need to give these fans or these listeners, I need to make sense. No, I do it for myself.
You don't have an analogy book?
I should. I use analogies for everything. People are like, I understand what you're saying. What are you using an analogy for? I should have a segment about my analogies. But so here's my analogies about Colorado. I love what Colorado does. They have shown me a different level of mental focus this year in the playoffs. I love all their ads, love their superstars. They've dealt with some adversity with injuries. They fought through, blah, blah, blah. With that being said, they are a team, to me, that is like a dog that's out in the yard. This might be the most well-behaved dog. You can put a cracker on his nose, and he'll sit there, and then you say, go, and he'll eat the cracker. Well-behaved dog. But if a squirrel comes running out, the dog's gone, man. He's not going to stop. He's not going to listen to you. You can do all the little halts and calls that you want. He ain't going to stop. And for me, that's the one thing with Colorado is they can lock it down. They can play. They can play a good all-around game. But I think they're susceptible. If you're going to go a little freelance with them, and we saw that in game one against Edmonton, if you're going to freelance, they can't help themselves because they want to play that way. They can play that way too. So I think of the Rangers – with their speed and the way they go off the rush and they can create and score on the power play, I think that could be an exciting finals as well. I mean, I think that both teams would be very tough, but I'd probably give the edge to Colorado over both teams.
That's a great answer, but my follow-up involves the analogy. What was the name of the dog that inspired that? It tells me that you had some experience here.
The name of the dog that inspired it? No, it's you don't have a dog? A movie. No, I do, but it's more from a movie, isn't it? Isn't that from someone help me out. Isn't it from Up? Remember Doug, I think is his name?
Yes. Is
it Doug? Right. That's the squirrel. Didn't he have that collar that made him talk? Yeah. And then he'd be there and he'd be like, squirrel, and he'd like go. Yeah. That's actually probably where it came from. But yeah, enter the mind of Mike Rupp. It's a weird one sometimes. So
if you had a band, would it be named The Analogies?
That would be good. That would be
because
good.
Because I see a drum set behind you. Is that yours?
Yeah. No, that's not my drum set. Okay. So I'm not at home right now. And okay. I do a lot of podcasts and stuff down here. And everybody asks that. I have this much. I love music, all types of music. I listen to everything. I've got zero talent in music. So I don't even know what I would be doing there.
You got to go do the podcast now. That's Hockey Talk. You liking it?
Yeah, I love it. It's great. Thanks for that. It's under the Pat McAfee umbrella.
Yeah.
So that Pat McAfee group is unbelievable. They're fun. He's got a couple of his buddies that are diehard hockey fans. So we started doing this in the fall and it's been great. We've had some great guests. And you know what I love about it the most? It's refreshing in regards to, I feel like because his following is so football oriented, all sports oriented, WWE type fans, where a lot of these fans are very casual. And I love my favorite thing and is we want to grow our game, man. We want everybody to experience Stanley Cup playoffs. So these fans are like, I have so many, they're like, hey man, I'm not really understanding even what's going on, but you told me to watch the playoffs. And these are unbelievable. Like what's happening here? We just saw 8 goals in the third period. And so I like it, man. It's an opportunity to keep growing the game. And obviously that's a huge platform with Pat. And he does a great job. Although he thinks the Penguins should win the cup every year. I try to tell him that doesn't always happen. And but it's good. It's good. It's called That's Hockey Talk. And we usually go on Wednesday nights. And it's a good time.
That's awesome stuff. And you're so good at it. And you're such an ambassador for our sport. Say hi to Pat. And I'm glad that we kind of bridged this gap. Do you feel better about our relationship now?
I do, man. I do. We made it through this. We had nobody dropping any fault, you know, any fierce language or anything. No. And there's no threats being made. So this might be the start of something. I like it.
Kerfuffle free between Rupp and Millard. This is a first. Thanks, buddy. And enjoy the rest of the playoffs, pal.
Awesome. Good talking to you, buddy. Talk to you.
That's some good hockey chatter right there. That's Hockey Talk is Mike's podcast. So check it out. I'm not going to lie to you. Like, I know what's going on. He's coming on. He's using our platform, which is extremely popular, to help out himself. And I like that because I do it the same way. Like, I'm using his platform. He's going to go on That's Hockey Talk and say that he was on the Chirp with Darren Millard. And so it's Mutual Admiration Society, which is a long way to come from where Mike Rupp and I were the last couple of years. I'm glad we weren't in the same room together because he would have been in a world of hurt with my burly frame. This goes back to the outdoor game in St. Louis, the alumni game between the Blues and the Chicago Blackhawks. We had a rivalry beyond belief because we both thought we were the top dog, speaking of the dog stories. But we've made amends, and that's amazing. That might be the biggest thing to come out of today's program. Mike Rupp and Darren Millard are back together. And Rupp, did you know that that whole double drafted thing was cool? That's a story that I hadn't heard before, which works out perfectly for us today, given that we're sneaking up in the National Hockey League draft July 7th and 8th in Montreal. And this is the go time for the guys over at NHL Draft Class. They are doing their thing. They were at the Draft Combine recently. They talked to Jack Hughes. They talked to Shane Wright. They talked to Juraj Slafkovský, which is my favorite name of all the players available in the National Hockey League draft. And we got some really cool conversations going on there. They're available every week, wherever you get your podcast, NHL Draft Class, and you can follow. Make sure that you're informed leading up to July 7th and 8th as we get back in person with the National Hockey League draft. Looking forward to that. I'm a draft nerd. I get right into it, and I think it's cool and a great way to educate yourself and see where your team's going to be when it comes to the podium on that opening night or day number two. Interesting. Rupp could have went to the draft twice, opted not to do it the second time. I don't know many players that have gone to the draft twice. A few guys have been drafted on a couple of occasions. Prediction time. Tampa Bay Rangers. We're going into it. Yet to be decided as we record this. I'm going Tampa Bay. Just purely. And I, like, my buddies are both coaches in Gerard Gallant and John Cooper. Like, I've told them both that I'm cheering for them separately, not on a party line. So they don't know this, but I'm totally sold out on both sides. But I am going to take Tampa Bay publicly just because of Cooper's stogie smoking, sunglass wearing, poolside sitting piece on Quest for the Cup. If you haven't seen Quest for the Cup, trust me, it's awesome. He's like, he's got the stogie going. He's like, might as well go for a third. He's got this alter ego going when he sits poolside. But based on what Stamkos is doing, can you believe that they won without Stamkos and then they won without Kucherov for the whole regular season? Then he stepped in. And this might be the most impressive one, what they've been able to do with their DNA. Cooper is awesome. He's never won coach of the year. I don't get it. It's bizarre. It's weird. He's never won coach of the year. But he's going to have a few new challengers next year because there's a whole slew of openings in the National Hockey League. And one more with Bruce Cassidy being let go by the Boston Bruins. I have two theories here. I don't know which one's true because I haven't been able to dial in as much as I'd like, but there's two things happening that I'm fairly confident, one or the other. Bruce Cassidy was let go because the Boston Bruins are going to tear it down. They're going to rebuild. They're going to get a top draft pick, and they want a coach in there that's not like the guy that's used to winning all the time is going to put pressure and talk to the manager and say, we need this, that we need to trade. We got to win. They want somebody that's going to be knowing going in that it's a rebuild with all the injuries and the rehab, and they're going to be without so many names going into next year. And Bergeron maybe doesn't come back, and they're aware of that. So that's one possibility. The other one is the total opposite. And there's no middle ground here with the Boston Bruins people. The other one is they're making one last run at the Stanley Cup and their window is closing. Some people think it's already closed, but they're going to put a new voice in there that's going to give them some kind of different look or opportunity. You heard the media availability on the last day. They were talking about breakouts and all this kind of stuff. The writing was on the wall from management. So this is their way to sell Patrice Bergeron. Come back. We got a new coach. We're going to do things a little differently. And there's all kinds of great energy. And this, we're going to have this dynamic approach, and they can also reach out to, and they've had contact with them, but they're going to also try and really sell David Krejci on this. So it's one more, and they'll say Marchand's going to be fresh because he's going through the rehab. He won't play as many games. We're going to hold it together to the start of the year, and then we're going to make one big run at it. I think that's also on the table. But the other part of it is Bruce Cassidy will coach in the National Hockey League next year if he wants to. That's for sure. And the likeliest place, I think, is Florida. Now, that's nothing to say that Andrew Burnett, our good buddy who's been on the trip before, did a terrible job there. But Bruce Cassidy is a solid coach. Like, he's got the resume that you can put in there to say he can win you a Stanley Cup, a team that's trying to break through in the Florida Panthers. And I know people are blaming Barry Trotz for holding up the coaching carousel right now. But I think it's the Florida Panthers that Barry's waiting for to see if they have an official opening. I think that the Florida Panthers would have reached out to Pete DeBoer at some point. Like, Cassidy, Trotz, and DeBoer are the most likely candidates to head into Florida. And I think Trotz is waiting for Florida to figure out what they're going to do before he makes a decision on what he's going to do. And he might be able to set the record officially for most teams interviewed. That's my thoughts as we wrap up the chirp with Darren Millard. Thanks to Mike Rupp for stopping by. That was a whole bunch of fun. And producer Bob Bender, thanks for your patience in this grand extravaganza. And we will watch with great interest to see who is in the Stanley Cup Final opposing the Colorado Avalanche in the 2022 Championship Series. Have a good week.